Welcome to Caffeine, Crime and Canines, a podcast brought to you by two girls who love their dogs, love coffee, but most importantly, love true crime. Hello.
Hi, Lucky. How are you going?
I'm good. How are you?
Not bad.
That's good.
It's new. How's your weekend been?
Oh, it's been bloody great.
Frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
I know how you, I actually feel so bad. I can't even tell you.
A lot of my friends that have gone have been messaging me and they're like, I'm just so annoyed because everyone's seen so many people there that were just not into it or like looked like they didn't want to be there or, you know, and yeah. There was like 30,000 people outside the MCG, that didn't get in, like, and there's people inside that don't even want to be there.
Yeah, it's honestly been one of the craziest things I've ever experienced. Like, I should update the listeners that on Thursday afternoon, one of the girls from work got two tickets and gave me one to Taylor Swift. So I did go on Friday night, and Lockie, I was like, how the heck am I even going to tell Lockie this? Like, honestly, I felt so bad for you and Danny. Like, I was just like, oh, and the thing is, what I find the craziest is that Julianne and I went with Julianne, who's a friend of ours. We have been trying so hard. Like, you know, like we've been talking about it every week. I feel like our listeners are probably sick of hearing about how hard we're trying. And like probably tonight will be the first night that I'll actually get to sleep before midnight because I've been trying for you as well and I've been up late. So I have been trying the last few nights, but I've been trying into the middle of the night trying to get tickets and I couldn't. And it wasn't even me that got them. It wasn't even Julianne that got them. It was Jess, who's not even a fan. Like, she hadn't been trying at all and she's the one that got through and got them. Like, completely random. And I was like, what the – like, how lucky am I, one, that she gave me the tickets? But two, it's crazy that, like, all these people I know that are trying so freaking hard and it's the randoms that are getting through.
Getting it, yeah. This makes no sense. And, like, people were still, like, even with the ticket releases that came out on Tuesday and Thursday this week, people went to the Ticketek office in Flinders Street and got tickets. And that is, like, for me, that – is a true queue system. Like, you're waiting in line, and if you get one, you get one, and I think that's fine. But the whole lounge, Ticketek lounge, like, that is just so completely random. It's just not fair.
It isn't, and it's like towards the end, I'm not kidding, and I kept joking about it. I'm like, I think Ticketek thinks I'm some sort of psycho bot or something because I've been on, like, every day. I was on every day in the line, every day, and when I'd get through, I'd click for 10 minutes and then I'd kick out and I'd start, you know, I'd have to start it again, right? And I was actually doing it, but I was a person trying to do that. And maybe Ticketek just thought, like, this is a bot. I have no idea. But then what are you meant to do if you're a fan? I just don't get it.
Yeah.
I do not get it.
Who knows? And people that went to multiple nights as well, like, I think that's a little bit greedy.
Yeah, that's one thing I'm not up for at all. Like, I get if you don't want to resell your ticket, do you know what I mean? And because potentially it could be somebody else exactly that's going to multiple nights that's going to get it. But give it to someone you know. Sell it to someone you know. There are so many people that are dying for a ticket. And my tickets, and obviously, like I said, I got lucky. We had, it was like $65, like restricted view. And I'm like, that's fine. I actually thought it was going to be comical seats. I was like, whatever it is, it is, you know. But they weren't even that bad. Like, I probably would have paid $150 for them. I'm not even kidding because I knew how hard it was to get. And I mean, we could see the stage, second level, we could see the stage, but there was like sort of restrictions on when she was sort of up against the screen. We couldn't see anything, but they had put up screens so we could still obviously follow along. So and I told you already about the people next to me. That's a thing. And I was just like, why are you here? Like, I don't understand. We had next to me, we had a couple. The guy was like just sort of on his phone the whole night. The girl, I feel bad. Like, maybe this is a thing that people do nowadays, but she recorded herself the whole night. singing the songs. Like, I feel like that's so random. Like, you could do that at home. She wasn't even recording Taylor. She was recording herself. And then the couple next to Julianne came late. They were an older couple. They FaceTimed, I don't know who it was, a few times. And then they just sat down and they weren't like, see, I was like, oh, my goodness. It's just, it's tough because you know how many people are trying. Like,
Yeah. Anyway, I think it's over now. Like, I don't think I'm going to get a ticket to go tonight. I think it's legitimately over, but I tried. I tried my best, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I did think, though, that I guess a silver lining. I didn't get tickets this time, but next time she's here, I'll obviously try again. And I'll probably be going with Elsie. So,
yes,
you know,
yes,
got to think like that.
So that is actually what an amazing way to think, Lockie. That's so good.
Yeah.
Although, can I tell you something? There was, and again, I was like, well, actually, I'd love to get a mother's point of view on this because there was someone in the front of me, like a lady who had bought her daughter, and the daughter might have been like 3 or 4. And she had headphones on and she was just really restless, wiggly. Like, she just wasn't. How old would Elsie have to be for you to take her?
Well, I've taken her to like kids' concerts that are obviously a lot shorter in length, so I know that she'll last. Elsie loves music. Like, I feel like I would love to take her to anything, but a show like that, I probably wouldn't. Like, the whole like bringing her in the crowds and all that would just make me too stressed.
Stressful,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Probably wouldn't. But like, I've been to like heavy metal shows and I've seen people with their babies there. Like,
wow.
So it does happen.
Wow. Okay, cool. Because I was like, what the heck? And not only that, but I feel like it's not even enjoyable for the mother. You know what I mean?
No.
Because she's trying to keep her daughter entertained and the daughter's just like, what's it like? Do you know what I mean? Run away. Yeah. Like, she's not, yeah. I feel like
I'd rather those two tickets be sold than to tip people that don't want to be there at all.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
That's so true. But, yes. Will conclude our Taylor Swift talking at the start of episodes because it's done now.
We should actually talk about Samantha Murphy, whether there's been any updates in the last week or so, which I don't think there really has. I think the police have declared that they think it's suspicious now.
Yes, and the reason they're saying suspicious is because they're, like they've said, they cannot find any trace of it. So they're saying that it's suspicious, but they're still not committed to like foul play. It's just very bizarre. I did see something crazy, sorry Lockie, that her dog ran away and was hit by a car like a few days after she went missing.
Like, what the hell? That's so sad.
I know, like, what the fudge.
I do think that they've just called it suspicious though because they've got no evidence of like an accident or anything. Like, of course they have to go with it being suspicious because there's no evidence otherwise.
Most people I speak to think that it is foul play. A few people still think it's the husband. You know what? I'm pretty sure my mum was one of them, and I started laughing because I was telling her about your mum.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that, but
yeah, anyway. I'm still in two minds. As I said, I'm still not back. I'm still not like putting any money on the husband, but I am now. The more I think about it, like, foul play is, which I said it last week anyway, like, would be one of my main theories. So, but yeah, we'll have to
watch that space. But do you want to get into this week? If we are,
yes,
yeah,
let's
do it.
Did you kill Jill Denver? She was so polished and so professional.
Jill Dander!
In many ways, I think people saw Jill as a TV Diana.
So glamorous, it's wonderful.
Jill was at the top of her game.
She was the nation's sweetheart.
The golden girl of British television. Murdered on her doorstep. In broad daylight.
Everyone had a theory about who was responsible. Criminal networks, mafia, Russians, jilted lovers,
Is this an assassination? Is this an execution?
The Crime Watch presenter may have been assassinated by a Serbian gunman.
Speculation focuses on a possible stalker.
This was one of the largest murder investigations the Metropolitan Police ever had to face.
It was the biggest reward in criminal history in this country.
Today, a man was arrested on suspicion of murder.
Do you recognise the person in the picture?
Anyone?
That's a picture of you, Mr. George.
During the course of the search, we recovered a lot of undeveloped film.
This was an injustice. He did not murder Jill Dando.
It makes me angry that they've taken 8 years of my life.
After his acquittal, there has been no more serious investigation into Jill Dando's death.
People are still coming to terms with one of the most bizarre murders ever committed.
Why would the killer? What benefit would anybody accrue from killing Jill Dando?
The files should still be open on this case. They should be looking.
To be sitting here 24 years on and saying that we still do not know who killed Jill Dando is mind-boggling.
Whoever did it is still out there.
Okay, so today we will be discussing the murder of Jill Dando. I just want to say a quick thank you to Stacey. This episode was requested by Stacey. And yeah, keep your requests coming. We are getting through them. I know it's slow, but we are getting through them.
We are.
So Jill Wendy Dando was born on November 9th, 1961 in Weston-super-Mare, England. People, do you know how many times that people message me on Insta and they're like, your pronunciation of places is just so funny. Like, I get it all the time because I just have no idea. So I'm hoping that's right.
Weston-super-Mare? I don't know. Weird.
All right, we're going with that.
Yeah.
So this was a seaside town in Somerset. And, look, have you ever been to England? I was just curious to ask you.
No, on the list. Right. No.
I've always wanted to go in the winter, like just because it looks magical, you know, with the snow and Christmas. But I do think this particular place, and this is the only reason I know it, is because it's near Bristol and Carmen is from Bristol. So that's the only place in the UK that I know.
Bristol. Shout out to Carmen. She's probably listening.
Yes. Hello, Carmen. Okay, so Jill's father's name was Jack and her mother's name was Winifred Mary Jean Hockey. And what how fancy is that name?
Yeah, Winifred. Winnie.
Yeah, Winifred. Yeah. Oh, my gosh, that's cute. That's really cute.
Yeah.
Jill had an older brother named Nigel and the family would spend every Sunday in summer picnicking by the beach. I just thought that was a really cute fun fact.
Mm.
When Jill was just 3 years old, she had major surgery because doctors found a hole in her heart and a blocked artery. Despite this, she grew up thriving. She became head girl, which from my understanding, it's like a leadership role that represents like the whole student body while completing her A-levels. Again, I'm like, what the heck is A-levels? It's like high school. I'm pretty sure it's high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, we never do UK cases, so I feel like I'm getting more familiar with all the American sort of slang or, you know, their wording for certain things, whereas UK I am blank. I have no idea. So from a young age, Jill dreamed of being on TV. She was warm and charming, and people have said she had a twinkle in her eyes.
Like she just had that kind of star
quality.
What's the word? Star quality, that's it.
Yeah, totally. And even when you see her, we're going to get into it soon, but when you do see her on TV, I can see that sparkle. It's just so genuine, you know?
Yeah.
So Jill acted in plays with amateur production companies performing in the Barnfield Theatre. And this is when she was quite young. In 1979, she volunteered at Sunshine Hospital Radio. Jill went on to study journalism and her brother Nigel actually worked as a journalist for BBC Radio, Bristol, before retiring in 2017. So I think that she was just like following in his footsteps.
Yeah.
Jill started her career as a trainee reporter for the Western Mercury. This was a local weekly newspaper where both her brother and her father worked. After about 5 years in print journalism, she transferred to the BBC, where she presented a regional news program called Spotlight Southwest, and she was on her way to becoming a beloved news anchor.
Yep.
Sadly, Jill's mother passed away in 1986 from leukemia when Jill was in her 20s, and her mother was only 57, so still so young.
Yeah.
In 1987, Jill began her career with Television Southwest before moving to BBC Spotlight in Plymouth. In early 1988, she transitioned to national television in London to present short news bulletins on BBC One and BBC Two.
They're just sub-channels, are they?
Yeah. Yeah, that's my understanding, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So she hosted various BBC television programs, including Breakfast Time, Breakfast News, The 1 o'clock News, The 6 o'clock News, Holiday, and Songs of Praise. In June 1995, Jill began hosting Crime Watch. This was a BBC television show that recreates major unsolved crimes to encourage the public to provide information that could help solve the case. This is a bit eerie, isn't it, Lockie?
Oh, it's like, yeah, what are the chances?
Yeah. So by this stage, she had moved to Fulham. And she was a household name and referred to as the Golden Girl of television and TV Diana. And this
she was like her and Princess Diana were just like the two hit girls of the UK, I suppose you could say.
Yes, and they did look quite similar. They had a really similar haircut.
Yeah.
And in the documentary I watched, I think it's Who Killed Jill Dando. It's on Netflix. Her hairdresser's on there, and he actually says that Jill was the first to have that haircut. And Gina, sorry, something else. I saw a comment that she looked just like the mum from Parent Trap, and she totally does. Do you see that?
I don't know.
You don't Maybe. Know them? The mum from, I feel like she looked, maybe because I've got, again, they've got the similar hair, but I feel like she really looked like the mum from Parent Trap.
Yeah.
So Jill dated a BBC executive named Bob for 7 years from 1989 to 1996. After their breakup, she briefly dated a national park warden named Simon Basil before meeting the love of her life, Alan Farthing.
Yep.
Ellen and Jill were introduced by a mutual friend. Ellen was a gynecologist and would eventually become the Queen's physician, which I found a little interesting.
And a little weird.
Yeah. Well, it's everywhere. Every time you see it, and I was like, I don't know. It's just, I sort of had to put it in there to make you laugh. When Jill met Ellen, he had recently separated from his wife. Soon after his divorce was finalized, Jill and Alan got engaged. This was in 1999. And they plan to wed in September of that same year. It seems as though 1999 was going to be a massive year for Jill. Her career was skyrocketing, and she was at the stage where she could sort of pick and choose on what projects she wanted to work on. On April 25th, 1999, Jill presented the first episode of Antiques Inspectors. The following day, she was set to host the 6 o'clock news, and she was also featured on the cover of that week's Radio Times magazine. She was scheduled to co-host the British Academy Television Awards and this is obviously 1999, with Michael Parkinson on May 9th. So this sort of just gives you a bit of like an overview on what the heck she had going on in the coming months.
At the time, yeah.
Yeah. Around this time, she was spending most of her time at Alan's place, and as she was in the process of selling her home at 29 Gowan Avenue, Fulham, and this was about 15 minutes away from Alan's. On the morning of April 26, 37-year-old Jill woke up at Alan's. She made him breakfast and left his home at around 10 a.m. in her BMW. She had plans for a charity lunch that day but wanted to run some errands first. She stopped by a petrol station for petrol and milk, and then she visited two stores at the local shopping centre. Afterwards, she returned home to collect her mail and some documents that had been faxed there. At around 11:32 a.m., as Jill walked towards her front door, she was grabbed from behind, knocked to the ground to the point where her face was almost touching the tiled step on her porch, and shot at close range once in the left side of her head, killing her instantly.
Yeah, it sounds like someone was waiting for her.
This is exactly what I think.
Mm.
About 15 minutes later, a neighbor stumbled across Jill's body. It was a bloody scene, but the neighbor did recognize Jill. In the 999 call, you can hear her telling the operator that she believes it's Jill and that her arms were already blue.
Oh,
I know. Jill was pronounced dead on arrival at the hospital just after 1 p.m. That evening, instead of Jill presenting the 6 p.m. news, her colleagues and friends had to report on her murder. And
Have you seen that footage?
Yeah.
It's sad, isn't it?
It is so sad. I couldn't even imagine how hard this would have been. And I remember because obviously they're recording a little bit before the presenter goes on air and they're asking her, like, are you okay? She's like, yes. Like, she just wants to, you know, do it.
It's do
just,
the news. Yeah.
So sad. In the early reports, they actually believe that Jill had been stabbed. But as I mentioned earlier, it was just that one single gunshot wound that killed her.
Mm-hmm.
This became one of the largest investigations ever conducted by Metropolitan Police and the biggest criminal inquiry in the country since the search for the Yorkshire Ripper, which I don't actually really – do you know that case? I actually put this on our list.
Yeah, a little bit. I think he was like a serial killer.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I would have definitely heard about him, but I don't know the details. So I was a little bit interested after reading that. There was intense media coverage as Jill was well known and loved all around the country. Surprisingly, not one person heard the gunshot. Jill's next door neighbor, a man named Richard, reported hearing a scream that he believed to be Jill, but at the time he said, quote, I thought it was someone surprising someone. Like, to him it sounded like a surprising, like an excited scream, you know, not like a horrified scream or a scared scream.
Yeah. Makes me think as well, like, was it like the gun, like, did it have a silencer on it or something?
Yes, and they do talk about this a little bit down the track, why didn't it make noise, which maybe we can get in when we go through theories. So after hearing the scream, he looked out of his window and saw a 6-foot-tall white man aged around 40 walking away from Jill's house. Police identified two witnesses who saw a man leaving the area. According to these witnesses, the man, as I said, was described in his 40s. He had thick black hair and appeared to be sturdy, wearing a dark waxed. I think it was sort of like a long jacket. And these witnesses have said that he wasn't wearing mask or gloves. And I think, I haven't written this in my notes, but I think that is important because there's no DNA found at the scene. There's like nothing of this particular murderer found at the scene.
Which I kind of understand. Like, it obviously was quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not only that, but it's not like it's in her house, you know. It was just, it was like, the thing is, Lockie, it was in broad daylight.
Yeah, at 11 in the morning.
This is gutsy. This is so freaking gutsy. Now, another witness reported seeing a man running across the road, stopping at a bus stop, and apparently he was sweaty. Like, he appeared sweaty. Around 11:40 a.m., someone saw a man crouching by railings in a nearby park, talking on his mobile phone. 10 minutes later, a driver had to brake suddenly when a man dashed across the road away from Jill Street. And these are just all random sightings. Obviously, people are calling in, and I'm telling you about them because this is really all the police had to go off, just these random sightings, you know, that were called in. Another one which I found quite interesting was a traffic inspector noticed a dodgy car around the same time that Jill was killed. She was getting ready to ticket the blue Range Rover on the street where Jill was found dead. The inspector began writing the ticket, but the driver brushed her off and sped away. And the thing is, to go with this particular like incident, shortly after CCTV footage caught the same Range Rover zooming away from the crime scene, running red lights, like to get away. So it wasn't just the traffic inspector, there's CCTV footage to sort of back this up. And I guess people ask, was the driver just trying to like dodge a ticket? But then they've got a fancy car. Like, you know what I mean? You think someone with a Range Rover is going to be able to pay their little parking fine. So I think that's why this Range Rover is a little suspicious. Police did look into all the footage of Jill that morning. For instance, you know, the footage of when she went to the petrol station, the footage of her at the shopping center, footage of her driving back home. And it did not look like anyone was following her. Like, and they went through it, you know, with a fine tooth comb.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't necessarily think anyone was following her. I think they were waiting.
Yeah, look, I think the same thing. Everyone, and like so many things you read, everyone is so stuck on the fact that she was being followed. And I'm like, but what? Why wouldn't someone, why couldn't someone have just been waiting there for it?
Yeah, that's what I reckon.
So after a year of little progress in the case, the police started focusing on a man named Barry George. From my understanding, police received a tip about him, and it was like an anonymous call concerning like a mentally unstable man who lived close to Jill. It turns out Barry had a history of stalking women and sexual offences. Police set up a trap to catch him, and when they raided his house, they found some creepy stuff, like a picture of him wearing a gas mask and holding a gun, right? They also found thousands of pictures of women he'd been stalking, and these pictures, have you seen them? They're like from behind, like it's like he didn't really know the women.
No.
It's just like women on the street from behind, or like it's not like one particular woman he's stalking. It's just females women. Out and about.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Apparently he had maps in his house as well, and they did find – see, I read a few different things that he had photos of Jill or like just magazine or like clippings of different presenters. So Jill was amongst them, but it wasn't just like a collection of photos of Jill.
Yeah.
So there may have been, do you know what I mean? Like Jill may have been in a magazine that he's cut out or he had in his possession, but it wasn't all Jill. So Barry spent some time in the army where apparently he learnt to handle rifles and machine guns, but he got discharged in 1982. The police claimed they had specific evidence linking Barry to the murder, and this was just a tiny speck of what they said was gunshot residue in his jacket pocket. This was a microscopic locky.
You think there'd be more than that? If
I know. And apparently his house was, like, filthy.
Yeah.
So for me, I feel like this is, I don't know, you would think there'd be more than this, you know, if he was the killer. So he seemed to have an obsession with guns and celebrities and was known for pretending to be a cop. I think he even did, like, he was, like, caught on footage doing some sort of stunt, as like as being a stuntman and things like that. It's sort of like just lived in a fantasy world, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Before his trial for Jill's murder, doctors diagnosed Barry with Asperger's syndrome. They also found he had a bunch of personality disorders, like antisocial and narcissistic traits, and maybe even paranoid tendencies. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, he had some health issues like epilepsy, and his IQ was on the lower side, and this was around 75, although some tests say that he was average intelligence. So I guess it depends who you want to believe, obviously, regarding a lot of these tests. I think definitely from his interview and interviews with him, you can tell that he's, you know, probably off. Yeah, off, like on the lower side, like on the lower IQ. He's just a little bit slower and just even just, you know, his, I guess, his answers to certain questions and things like that. I do see that he would be on the lower side of the IQ test. Mm-hmm. And it's obvious. It's not like, you know, he was a mastermind. You can tell that he wasn't.
Yeah.
So Barry got arrested and charged with Jill's murder in May 2000. They managed to put together a case after finding that teeny bit of gunshot residue in his coat pocket. And remember, this is a year later as well. So the police are saying, yeah, because it is a year later, that's why there's only a tiny bit. But I still think there'd be so much more evidence at the scene, right? So another thing that the police do say is that this particular particle matched, like, particles found at the crime scene. He was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison in 2001. Barry tried to appeal his convictions, and even though his first two attempts failed, the third one was successful. He got another trial for Jill's murder, but this time they couldn't use the discredited forensic evidence that was the only real thing tying him to the crime. So after obviously all these years, like whatever it is, 8 years in jail, they did start to find, and I think that, like, you know, there was like an advocate that sort of traveled to America that did want to, like, understand this particular piece of evidence that they found in his jacket coat. But I think that a lot of the, you know, the scientists and stuff in America started to say that they weren't using this particular evidence in their crimes because it was discredited. So then how the heck could this one particular particle be the only thing that's tying him to the murder?
Yeah, and I think that speaks volumes. Like, if they don't have anything else.
Exactly.
You know?
Mm. Exactly right. So Barry was acquitted of Jill's murder in August 2008. His defense team argued that he wasn't capable to pull something like this off. And Lockie, my Georgie isn't clever enough to hatch a scheme like this. I had to say it because his name's George and it's a quote from Seinfeld. And it fits perfectly because exactly right. Like, it feels like this. I mean, I don't know that it was a hit, but I feel like someone quite intelligent would have had to have pulled this off. Or I mean, lucky as well, but they would have had to have some sort of plan together, you know?
And I also think, like, from his history, I don't think he would want to kill a woman. I feel like he'd want to, like,
take
abduct a woman. Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't know. I just don't feel like the kill was what he would have wanted out of it, the whole thing anyway.
Yeah, I agree. And especially, I mean, it sounds really bad, but there was no evidence, like, of sexual, like, it was quick. It was just like, you know what I mean? Like, what's the motive here?
Yeah, it was like, bang, walk away. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what the motive is, right? So Jill's funeral took place in 1999 at the church she was meant to marry in.
Sad.
She was buried next to her mum, and her dad got her estate since she hadn't left a will. Thousands of people turned up to pay their respects. an institute in her name, the Jill Dado Institute of Crime Science, was founded in 2001 at the University College London, with funding from her co-presenter Nick Ross and her fiance Alan Farthing. A memorial garden was created in her honor, and this was filled with flowers of all her favorite colors. I thought that's a like really sweet touch, you know. Additionally, a bursary, I didn't even know what that is, it's like a bunch of money sort of thing, was for broadcasting journalism students was set up by the BBC in her memory, and a university building was also named after her at Western College. So these are just some things to, I guess, sort of pay tribute to Jill. More than 2,000 people were looked into as potential suspects during the investigation, but the case still remains unsolved.
Mm.
So let's get into theories and speculation. I'm dying to know what your thoughts are, right? So I've just put a whole bunch down and maybe we can just talk through them. There are a few that I think are just, you know, like not even on my radar. Yeah, exactly. Mm. One is like the jealous ex, and this is because remember she was dating that guy Bob for years, right? Apparently, just before they broke up, she had transferred him $30,000. And some say, or the investigators thought like maybe he didn't have enough to pay her back. Was she waiting for it back? But in the end, I'm pretty sure that this was just a gift. It wasn't even like they couldn't find anything, you know, connecting him obviously to the murder, or even that she was looking to get that money back. I think it was something to do with the house, I don't know, that he had purchased. But yeah, it was just a gift. It shows like how generous she was.
Yeah, I don't really think that that's got much weight. That
theory. So I'm not about that theory. Mistaken identity or wrong place, wrong time.
No,
I'm the same. I just do not think. Like, again, what is the motive, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like she was robbed. All her, you know, her handbag's still there, her car keys, everything. They could have taken whatever they wanted. They could have gone into her house. They didn't.
Yeah.
So a rival or someone she knew. Again, I'm not really into this theory, but I do want to tell you a crazy fact. Like, what are the freaking chances of this, right? So her agent of 10 years, Ron, had inconveniently written a crime novel thriller about an agent whose clients are mysteriously murdered. Lucky, what the heck? And this was like, this was only week, like I think he had just finished it weeks before her death. And I guess he was thoroughly investigated because he was the one that sent her to her house to pick up those. He's the one that sent those faxes to her house. So one, he knew she was going to be at the house, and two, he had sent her there to pick up the faxes.
But, like, what's his motive?
Yeah, exactly.
Or to sell some books.
No, and he never released the book.
Exactly. That says it all.
Yeah, he never released the book. And I'm pretty sure, again, he's interviewed in the Netflix documentary, and he says, like, sounds, like, not selfish, but ridiculous. Like, she was making him a lot of money, and she was people say that, all right, she had reached her peak. Not she had reached her peak, but she was going to just get bigger and bigger, you know. Like, she was the biggest, but she still had room to get even bigger. Like, who knows what she would have become. And he had been with her for 10 years, you know.
I do get a bit of a weird vibe from him. Like, I think he's a bit of a weird person, but I don't think that he had anything to do with it.
I think that, like, agents in general, you sort of have to be sort of cutthroat. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So his personality doesn't really shock me, if that makes sense. Sort of think it goes with his job.
Yeah.
This one, right? Hired assassin or a mob hit. What do you think? Mm.
I think it's possible.
Mm. I think it's a possibility, right? So potentially revenge for something that she had said on Crime Watch. This is what they're saying, you know, that would sort of go towards it. Like, had she put out information? Was she looking into, you know, some sort of crime? Was she found information on some sort of crime? A lot of people say that if it was a hired assassin or mob hit, it would have been a little bit more organized. Like, it wouldn't have been in broad daylight. Like, that's pretty risky behavior, right? Obviously, she wasn't really staying at that particular house, and if she hasn't been followed, like, what were they doing just hanging out? Like, you feel like, let's just say if it was a hired assassin, would it be at her house during the day? Like, she'd probably be thinking, walking back to her car, you know what I mean? Like, at night, and the hired assassin would probably know when she was at her partner's or when she was alone there. Like, I just feel like it's a weird place to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's that weird. If it was a hired assassin, I think a lot of it wouldn't make sense, and that's why they've got away with it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yep, and this is one of the things, obviously, that we're just chatting about earlier, whether we think that the person did use a silencer, because the examination of the cartridge case and the bullet found at the scene indicated that the weapon used might have been modified, right? So some people think that it was more – that this was more like a home job, like this particular bullet, whereas like the mob or a hitman would have had access to a silencer. So a lot of people are saying that that points away from someone a bit more professional because it was like a dodgy bullet, if that makes sense.
I think, like – I mean, I wouldn't call an assassin or the mob professional. You know what I mean? Like, they do illegal stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like,
but I feel like they're just experienced.
Just because it looks like a home job doesn't mean it's not an assassin or a mob hit, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, reviews of the case by the police after 2008 suggested that Jill was murdered by a professional hitman in close range execution sort of style, and they think that the reason why nobody heard a gunshot is because the gun was pressed against her head and would have acted as a silencer, muffling the shot, and this also would have kept the killer from being covered in blood.
Yeah,
because I don't know if you've seen the scene, Lockie, it is very bloody.
Yeah,
it's a very bloody scene. Like, it's crazy for me to think that, I mean, if someone just did it and walked away, maybe obviously the blood then has obviously, do you know what I mean, like, leaked out. But I don't know. It's crazy to think that they had no blood on them. And if it was that guy Barrett, like, he would have had some sort of evidence on him or taken back to his house, you know?
I think I lean towards this theory the most because it just was so quick, and you can tell that the aim of this was to kill. Like, you know.
Yes, yeah, that was the motive was to kill her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the Range Rover as well also indicates an assassin, like the nice car.
Mm-hmm,
like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally see that.
So, yeah, it's probably where I'm leaning the most, and we obviously don't know why she would be killed, but don't know what goes on in other people's lives.
Yes, well, I have a little bit of speculation or things, I guess, that maybe why someone would have wanted to kill her. One was, like, retaliation against media outlets for appealing for aid to Yugoslav. And I'm so bad with wars and stuff like that, so hopefully I don't get any of this wrong. But apparently, like, there were claims of BBC being targeted for revenge due to their coverage of NATO's bombing of Serbia in early 1999 during the Kosovo. Is that how you say it?
Kosovo
war. There were calls suggesting that Jill's murder was linked to Serbia's conflict with NATO. And although these claims were doubted and might have been false, during the trial it was hinted that a Serbian warlord ordered her assassination in retaliation for those NATO bombings. And it's also suggested that Jill's advocacy for the Kosovo, I'm so sorry, everyone. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how to say this, right?
The war,
war on TV might have drawn the attention, like her, because she's the one obviously advocating for it, that might have actually gotten the attention of Serbian hardliners.
Yeah.
Also, in 2019, a British intel report hinted that there might be a link between Jill's murder and the NATO bombings of Serbian TV station. So apparently they spotted similarities linking the bullets used in her murder and those used in hits in Germany. So there is like a whole bunch of like things that are linking her to this particular war.
And I think as well, like, these wars that happen in, you know, like these kind of second and third world countries, reporters and media are held gravely responsible, you know?
Yeah, of course.
You hear all the time about reporters being detained or put in prison or, you know, like, they have a big hate for the media, I suppose you could say. Mm.
Yes. And apparently, like, in 2009, four Serbian Secret Service guys got busted for a hit on another journalist in Belgrade.
Yeah.
Which and apparently he was killed using the same method.
Yeah.
So there's definitely, like, something going on there, right? So that's, I guess, one reason why it could have been like a hired assassin. Another is, and Lockie, you know how I feel about this. She was looking into a pedophile ring. And you know how how I think that, one, not that I think, this freaking happens. And this is a way to silence people. Because I saw this thing and someone's like, listen, if she was looking into this pedophile ring, it would just make the people that were looking into it with her want to talk louder. I don't think so. I honestly do not think so, right? So I'll quickly just give you a little bit, right, on this particular theory. So there were rumors swirling that Jill was digging into a pedophile ring at the BBC. You remember that Jimmy Savile guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, over 600 people came forward saying that he'd been abusing teenage girls for years. And he was a big shot and he was respected by everyone. Allegedly, he did all his creepy stuff. And this, he did it at, like, hospitals, Lockie.
Yeah.
And even at the BBC, right? And the victims aged from 5 to 75 years old.
God.
Now, Jill supposedly passed her findings on to management. Then in 2014, the Daily Express dropped a bombshell claiming that Jill was about to blow the lid off a major pedophile ring on Crime Watch. A friend of hers spilled the beans, saying that Jill had some solid evidence against these powerful people. But the BBC have denied seeing any evidence, but people started wondering if Jill's murder was meant to shut down her investigation and keep all those big names from being exposed.
I don't agree. Ooh. Mainly because I think, like, this is what I don't get with this kind of stuff. Like, Jill was a reporter. She wasn't the only person at the BBC, you know? Like, she wasn't purely responsible for that story being put on air. And I think if people wanted to put an end to it going on air, they would go to management. And I just think killing her isn't going to stop it. I don't know. I just, that's probably where I go to with that. Like, I just don't think that killing her would have stopped it.
But Lockie, I don't know. How about Sister Kathy? Just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Same freaking thing. I'm sorry. It's the same thing. And not only that, but people get, remember her little roommate that lived with her? She was too scared to say anything. This is, I honestly, like, that is pretty much proven with Sister Kathy, right? This, I feel like, even one, if it was big shots at BBC, if she was looking into this story, she might have been looking at it or looking into it in her own time, by herself. Like, she might have just been something. The only thing I get is that, obviously, like, they didn't find any info regarding this, unless all the info back then, she, obviously, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's a little bit harder to have multiple, like, computers and stuff like that, unless she literally, like, gave everything she had to these big shots at BBC, right? But let's just say she was on her own looking at it, and she had just told a few people. Like, who knows how many people are involved in this? She had heard rumors. Maybe she hadn't fully started looking into it, but she was, like, the face of the UK. Everyone knew her. I feel like people did trust her. So if she was going to advocate for these, even these young girls with this freaking creepo Jimmy Savile, who this was happening around that time, you don't think that she's not a threat? I feel like she's a threat. And like, you're going to shut up. The second this happens and you know she's researching it, you don't think you're going to shut your mouth? Like, I feel like you would. You'd be scared.
I mean, I think what I what would give this theory a little bit of weight for me is that if any of her close friends or family or even her agent, if they knew that this story was running around and that's what she was looking into. I don't believe someone would look into something like this and not tell a freaking soul.
No, but that's what they're saying. So a friend came forward. A friend of hers came forward in 2014.
Yeah, in 2014. Like, why? Yeah. Why that? I don't know.
It might be because that freako, like, I don't even know this timeline with this Jimmy guy, right? But maybe because, like, think about it. I feel like, let's just say from 2010 onwards, this sort of stuff about, like, you know, pedophile rings and, like, celebrities that are, like, Bill Cosby, all this stuff, it's a lot more talked about. Yes.
Yeah.
Whereas back then, even if you say stuff like this, a lot of people are just going to brush it off, think you're a conspiracy theorist, think you're like a little bit, like, do you know what I mean? Like, you're not as likely to be believed. And imagine you're not believed. And then on top of it, you've gone and, do you know what I mean, told people and you're not even believed about it. Like, what the heck's the point of putting your life in danger for that? Whereas Jill, I feel like, would have been believed because, you know, she just had that about her.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's a small possibility. I'm probably like maybe 50% hitman, 30% obsessed fan, 20% pedophile ring. Like, that's probably my split.
I'll take that. Well, you know, I was just about to say to you, what do you think about? Because the next theory is the obsessed fan.
Yeah, I think it's possible. And you know, John Lennon and all those people that just got shot by a fan.
Yes, that Christina Grimmie. You know what's funny? I actually, like, yes, I'm probably 50-50 between this pedo ring and the obsessed fan.
Okay.
I feel like obsessed fan makes sense to me because she had just gotten engaged.
Yeah, right? Like, if I can't have you, no one can.
No one can. And these people, exactly, are crazy. Like, they actually think, like, some people are delusional and think that they're in a relationship with the celebrity. And it just makes sense to me. Like, we see all the time stalkers waiting at celebrities' houses, like, 24 hours a day. I think it would have been easier to know where she lives, not where her boyfriend lives. You know what I mean? Mm. Or her fiance. Mm-hmm. I feel like that would have been probably, unless I followed her, that would have been harder to find. Whereas I think that, you know, I feel like it's easier to sort of find out where a celebrity lives or like someone's like, oh my gosh, like, you know, Jill lives on my auntie's street or something along those lines, right? It's easier to find out where she actually lives. I think exactly right. This psycho fan used to just stay by herself, go to her house every day, whatever it was, and was obsessed with her. And when they found out she was engaged, she was getting married that same year, they killed her because they thought, no, you will not get married to Alan. Yeah. I might have called him Ian before, but yeah. Yes. So,
I'd actually be interested to see what the listeners think. So I think you should put up a poll because
I would totally.
There's good arguments for each of those three theories.
Yeah. For sure. Mm. But yes, that is our case this week, Lockie.
Crazy.
Crazy one.
So if you have a case you want us to cover, you can send us a message on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is @caffeinecrimeandcanines, or you can head to our website and leave a request in the request box. If you want to support the podcast, you can leave us a 5-star review. Head to our website to purchase some merchandise, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/caffeinecrimeandcanines.
And until next week.
Until next week.
Bye.